Good morning. It's 9:06. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network. Time magazine recently released its list of the 50 best inventions and 5 worst inventions of 2009. This hour, we're going to talk about that list with one of the people responsible for compiling it, Lev Grossman, best-selling author, book critic, and technology writer for Time magazine. He joins me by phone. And by the way, you can too at any time during the hour at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email. The address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And the link to the list of the 50 best inventions of 2009 at the Time magazine website is up on Kathleen's Facebook fan page, so you can go there and find it. Let me welcome in Lev Grossman, best-selling author, book critic, and technology writer for Time, who joins us by phone. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, let's start with the article. Let's start with how the list was compiled.
Well, it's an all-year job that begins in January, and what happens basically is you know, the staff here at Time, we have a fairly large in-house staff of writers, each of whom has a sort of specialty or a beat, as we call it in the journalism world, and everybody just stays very close to the ground, reading trade journals, staying in touch with R&D departments and scientists and researchers, and looking really for new ideas. And we have a big folder, and whenever we find a new idea, we throw it in the folder. And then around about September, we open up the folder, which at that point has about 1,000 things in it, and we start sifting through and arguing about which of these ideas is the best invention of the year.
Well, I'm actually going to start this a little backwards, because one of the other things besides compiling the 50 best inventions was you came up with a short list at the end of the article of the 5 worst inventions. And the reason I want to start there is that list is actually what caught my eye first and what caused me to refer this article to Rhonda Fanning, who produces this program. And that's because one of the items on the 5 worst inventions list was the two Jane Austen mashup novels, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and Sense and Sensibilities and Sea Monsters. And I interviewed the authors, the co-authors of both of those books on this program, and Rhonda and I thought they were great. And so I saw them on the 5 worst inventions list, and I pointed that out to Rhonda, and I said, we've got to do this list on the air just so I can ask why that one made the 5 worst. I realize it's probably not a serious question, but I really do want to know.
Oh, I take it seriously. This is the first year we've done a worst inventions list, and it has been my intention ever since I started working on this annual issue 7 years ago to publish a worst inventions list. And it's the first year I've actually gotten it into the magazine. To celebrate that occasion, I indulge a pet peeve of mine, which is these accursed Jane Austen monster mashup novels. I too was amused for approximately 30 seconds when the first of these came out, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and I too, in fact, interviewed one of the co-authors.
We tried to get Jane Austen, but she refused to comment. So
she's a tough get. She's a tough get. Yeah, Oprah gets her. I think. That's
Yeah,
it.
Don't tell me. Yeah.
it was amusing, briefly, but the oncoming avalanche of knockoff novels is already upon us, and this was my probably quixotic effort to nip this trend in the bud.
Good luck with that.
Thank you.
On a more serious note, I have to say that I had managed to escape reading any of Jane Austen's work up until this point in my life, and that was to my that wasn't. I'm not bragging about that. That was a mistake on my part, because one of the things that it did was it forced me to go back and read the original works. And it's not really my taste in literature, but it was valuable for me. Well, I mean, some of the things on that 5 worst list were pretty obvious. I mean, the gas mask bra, a computer program to grade student essays. Those are pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move to the 50 best inventions list, and I want to start with number 50, first, because it kind of, that one also, kinda, all of these were just really eye-catching. And what was really great about it as I was reading the article was the fact that, you know, there were so many of these that I consider myself somebody who is fairly current, and I had no clue that some of this stuff was going on. So it suggested to me that I need to do even more reading than I normally do. The world's fastest steam-powered car. This is not something I'm likely to see parked in somebody's driveway anytime soon.
Well, that's unlikely. It's certainly unlikely. And I have a special affection for this particular invention, which has a kind of elegant, and to overuse this word, quixotic feel to it, because, of course, steam power is considered to be a technological dead end. But somebody, in fact, a man named Charles Burnett III, decided that he would return to steam power and see how efficient you could make it. And in fact, he got his steam car up to 151 miles per hour, which is pretty impressive. And I thought it was wonderful that somebody was looking so far outside the box that they could get away from internal combustion and actually look back to steam, which was initially, you know, the great promise of transportation.
And this I'm referring to another Time magazine article that I just read the other day. Steam also is referenced in some of the there was actually an attempt to build a steam powered computer at one time, a thinking engine.
Oh, that's right. The Babbage's difference engine. Well, the popular misconception that it was steam powered. It could have been steam powered. That it had a hand crank on the side, which you could turn by whatever means you saw fit. And steam would have been a likely choice for that. And it's sort of wonderful to think, what if big oil and internal combustion had not, you know, gotten the lock. Gotten the monopoly. What would happen if technology had developed on the line down the line of steam rather than some other medium? It's sort of wonderful to speculate, and I suppose we would end up something like with something like the fastest steam car in the world.
Well, maybe it would be in my driveway then. You never know. Okay, let's take another one. Clearly, the steam car wasn't the only transportation invention on the list. I want to talk about some of the others, and some of these seem a little facetious, but they're really not. One that's definitely not would be the Nissan Leaf.
Right. Well, we try to stay atop, especially of green technologies, because. It's obviously, you know, it's an area of incredibly hot development right now. And, you know, this is something that, like, a lot of, it's not really a discovery of ours. A lot of people know about the Nissan Leaf. It's not exactly a secret. But we wanted to, you know, to salute a company that is really pushing the envelope of the all-electric car, not a hybrid, but, in fact, an entirely electric car, and that's Nissan. And I think the Leaf is pretty impressive, and it'll be very interesting to see whether it gets traction. We were especially impressed by two things. One, that they were building out an entire sort of infrastructure of electric filling stations that could be used to support this thing, because, of course, that's what you need to make a technology viable. I was also very impressed by the noise that it made. They decided at Nissan that electric cars were too quiet. There was a danger that they would start, you know, hitting people or animals because nobody can hear them coming. So they made a little sort of futuristic sort of whirring noise. They built it into it based on the noise that flying cars made in the movie Blade Runner. And I thought that was quite an elegant touch.
Well, maybe they should have put in the sound effect of the George Jetson Spacemobile or something.
That, you know, I feel like you could start, it'd be like ringtones, you know? You can download your favorite car noise for your electric car.
Oh, that'd be cool. That would be, well, I just get way too excited over that. I'm still embracing my inner nerd. On the other hand, you've got the Nissan Leaf on the one hand and then the Yike Bike.
Right, the Yike Bike is a delightful little thing out of New Zealand. It's basically a tiny little folding electric bicycle. It's so small that you just sort of sit down on it. It's about the dimensions of a step stool, but it shows real promise, I think, as an alternative to the car as a way of commuting. It's got a real low carbon profile, a real low physical profile. It just doesn't take up any room. And they're trying to get it off the ground in New Zealand. I understand it's doing very well. The theme song for the Yike Bike commercial apparently is a big hit in New Zealand. So hopefully the actual adoption of the Yike Bike will follow.
We're talking about Time Magazine's list of the best inventions, best and worst inventions of 2009 with Lev Grossman, best-selling author, book critic, and technology writer for Time Magazine, one of the people who helps to put this list together every year. And if you'd like to actually see the entire list, we've put a link to the list on Time Magazine's website. We put the link to that list on Kathleen Dunn's Facebook fan page. So if you go to Facebook and search for Kathleen Dunn, you should be able to see the link there, and you can actually see what's on the list. And you feel free to call in and ask questions about any of the items that we've talked about, or maybe you know an invention and you want to know if it's on the list. You can call in and we'll be able to tell you the whether it is or isn't, and maybe you can make your case for something that didn't quite make the list. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number. That's good pretty much anywhere you can hear the program. If you'd like to send us an email, the address is talk@wpr.org. All right, let's talk about some more transportation devices because there was, the Universal Unicycle was another one that caught my eye.
This thing, it's one of those things that literally looks impossible. It's a small unicycle, really, with a very special wheel on the bottom. First of all, it stands up by itself. You don't have to do that sort of circus balancing act that you do with a regular unicycle. It like the Segway, it sort of defies gravity. And all you need to do is sit down on it, and not only does it stand up by itself and move by itself, it's battery powered. It moves in any direction, forwards and backwards, and in fact side to side. This is a prototype made by Honda, and to sort of demonstrate the potential of the technology. And when you see it move, and you can look it up on YouTube. There's film of it online. It really looks like an artifact that fell out of a time machine. It's really gorgeous. Whether they can manufacture it on a grand scale or price it in a way that consumers can adopt it, that remains to be seen. But the technology itself is truly astounding.
Given the weather predicted for Wisconsin the next couple of days, I'm wondering how it would do in snow. And I'm guessing not very well.
I don't know if you can get chains on that thing.
Yeah, probably not. Here's another one, and this one seems kind of silly, but really not. The edible race car. Did you get to taste it?
Sadly, no, or maybe not sadly, actually. I'm not actually that sorry about that. This is a Formula 3 racer that was built by a team in England. And again, it's kind of a proof of concept. They decided to see, you know, race cars are, of course, among the least green technologies available on the planet. And they decided to see how green they could get with a race car. And what they did was build an entire race car out of sort of natural products and byproducts. So there's the side mirrors made out of potato starch. The steering wheel is molded out of carrot fibers, and the whole thing runs on biodiesel, a mix of vegetable oil and, oddly enough, chocolate. it's probably, you know, not going to win too many races, but it shows off a wide variety of green technologies in a very sleek and actually quite cool-looking package.
Yeah, the picture, it looks like any other race car. It looks fast. You know, I mean, that's the way race cars are supposed to look.
Yeah, you would not know that it was edible.
We're talking about Time Magazine's list of the best and worst inventions of 2009, and we wonder what you think of this conversation we're having. Please join us at 800-642-1234. You can go to Kathleen's Facebook fan page and find a link to the Time Magazine website, and you'll go right to that list of the 50 best inventions of 2009. You can take a look at it and call in with your comments. 800-642-1234. Send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network at Wisconsin Public Radio. 22 minutes after 9 o'clock, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn this morning. We're talking about Time Magazine's best and worst inventions of 2009 with Lev Grossman. And in just a moment, we'll get back to that conversation. But I just want to let you know about some other things that are happening today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 6 o'clock tonight, On Point, Building Peace in Afghanistan from the Ground Up. The book Three Cups of Tea told how Greg Mortensen came to build schools in the remote mountains of Afghanistan and Pakistan. Now he's talking about much more. That's On Point tonight after 6 o'clock here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, as I said, this hour we're talking about the best and worst inventions of 2009 with Lev Grossman, best-selling author, book critic, and technology writer for Time Magazine. And again, there's a link to the list of those. There's a link to the list of those 50 top inventions of 2009 on the Kathleen Dunn fan page on Facebook. You can go there and take a look at it. And then please join us at 800-642-1234 or talk at WPR.org. You can send us an email. All right. Before we just really go back into the list, I think one of the things that whenever I see this article, and this is an annual thing in Time Magazine, I'm always struck by how continuously creative we human beings are. I mean, we're always coming up with new stuff that really, you know, makes you think, and some of it seems a little goofy, but we seem to really be inventive as a species, I guess you could say, and it must be fascinating. You said you have thousands of these things you sift through. It must be fascinating for you to go through all this stuff and see just how creative we can be.
Well, as a side note, I do have the greatest job in the world, and I make no bones about it. And one of the great things about doing this issue is that it is, to put it glibly, a feel-good story. In a year when there's a lot of, especially in years when there's a lot of adversity, a lot of crises, economic and otherwise, those are actually the years when you tend to get the strongest innovations, because it turns out that when researchers and human beings in general are stressed, when they get pressure put on them, that is when people really start to innovate and really come up with radical new ideas. It's exciting, and the worse the news gets in the rest of the magazine, the better the inventions get.
So necessity is the mother of invention. Is that that the
phrase
you're
looking for? I guess
that's
what I was trying to say.
Okay. All right. We were talking about transportation before the break, and actually the number one, I'm not saving this for the last 5 minutes of the program because I want to make sure we talk about it, and if I don't do it now, we'll probably lose track of time here, or I will. The top transportation invention, and indeed the number one invention on your list, is the Ares rocket. This is a pretty big feat of technology and a big deal for NASA.
Well, it's astounding, and it's a story that actually I thought got a little underplayed this year. This is the first rocket that the first new rocket NASA has done in the past, I think, 30 years. I mean, we really abandoned rocketry for a long time to focus on the space shuttle. And astoundingly, what NASA decided this year, was that the space shuttle was a dead end. In fact, it was not necessarily, in the end, a good idea. And in fact, what they did was return to rocketry-based spaceflight, which will now dominate what NASA does outside of Earth's orbit for the next few decades. And they created this, you know, really astounding machine, which is basically directly descended from, you know, the very earliest rockets, and really, you know, back to the V2, but refitted entirely and reconceived with the kind of technology that we have today. And it's a beautiful thing, and it performed, you know, amazingly in its test launch earlier this fall.
So what are we going to use the Ares for? What's NASA's intent with this new rocket?
Well, like the space shuttle, it's a workhorse and quite diverse. It will be used for lifting things into orbit, but it also has the potential to go much further. It's what will take us back to the moon and ultimately what will take us to Mars.
And there's been a lot of talk about going to Mars and indeed investigating the rest of our solar system, if we can find ways to overcome the enormous obstacles to interplanetary transportation. Those of us who grew up watching Star Trek and Star Wars and all the other sci-fi that's been on television and in film over the last 30 years, we don't think about the fact that, you know, there really isn't warp speed, and you can't just get on a ship and, you know, 3 seconds later be outside the solar system. This would be being able to investigate other planets with actual human beings going out and doing it instead of just sending out machines would be a really, really big deal if they can overcome the obstacles.
Right. I mean, the minute we get a warp drive up and running, I promise you it will be the number one best invention of the year.
Well,
but until then, you know, this is what we've got. And it's actually it's a very practical, very realistic approach to getting not just into orbit, but into much further destinations within the solar system.
Well, number six on your speaking of Star Trek, number six on your list of inventions is teleportation. So, did someone invent the matter transporter, and will I not have to get in my car and drive 5 hours to get to Madison anymore?
This is actually, although it makes a good headline, it's probably the number one most disappointing invention on the list. What happens basically is this is a way for instantaneously moving not matter, actually, but more like information. It's a way of taking two particles, two subatomic particles, and making them behave exactly the same way virtually simultaneously over a considerable distance in space. It's an astounding achievement in a way, but you won't be beaming up or down or in any direction anytime soon.
Rats.
Yeah,
okay.
Disappointing, like I said.
Yeah, I've just, you know, now I'm depressed. Continuing with the outer space theme, there's a telescope for invisible stars. If they're invisible, how can they be stars?
The feel-good story of the year in space, which is the launch of the Herschel Space Observatory. Again, a somewhat underreported story, possibly because NASA wasn't the lead on it. It was the European Space Agency. But this is the largest, it's the largest space telescope ever put up, larger than the Hubble, and it's especially adapted to examining areas of the solar system and the universe that are extremely cold, so picking up really tiny amounts of radiation. And what it will do is be able to enable us to look very, very deep into the universe and get a greater sense of how things were at the beginning of the universe and how it evolved. And there's already some wonderful images coming back from it. And it's another instance where they put this thing up, and amazingly, it did exactly what they wanted it to, which, you know, doesn't always happen when you're putting things in orbit.
People who follow stories about the Pentagon and things are used to hearing about, like, you know, $300 hammers and $600 toilet seats and things like that. But this list contains a $10 million light bulb.
Misleading headline. This is a headline. This is a light bulb developed by Philips, and it's a very humble invention. Because what it is, the U.S. Department of Energy is holding a contest. The prize is $10 million, and what you have to do to win it is develop an LED light bulb, a light-emitting diode light bulb, that will replace the common 60-watt incandescent bulb. And basically what it has to do is function on less than 10 watts. And if you can develop one of these that's cheap and can, you know, functionally replace the 60-watt bulb, you're going to save the United States and the world. I mean, just astounding amounts of energy. I mean, just, you know, really significant amounts of energy and carbon emissions. And Philips is the first company that has entered the competition. They've come up with something they think might work. And it's in testing now. It probably would have been the invention of the year if we had confirmed results, but it's in testing now, and we wanted to acknowledge that they've got something that, you know, something, this thing or something like it will be in every home in America in 10 years.
And we have a caller on the line. Roger in Sauk County is with us, and let's take Roger's call. Roger, good morning.
Hi. I had a question. You've mentioned a couple different electric transportation devices, and you said, I don't remember which one, you said it has a small carbon footprint. I have a question kind of side-related. And I hear this a lot in transportation devices about electric things have a small carbon footprint. Doesn't it depend on where their electricity is coming from, if it's from a coal plant or if it's from a hydro plant? And if you could just talk to that.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, when you talk about carbon footprints, you have to trace it. You have to trace it back, not just the energy it's using, but how that energy is made, and where it comes from. I completely agree, and also the energy that's used to produce it, to manufacture the object in the first place. I was speaking somewhat glibly. The Eik bike is this electric bicycle that's becoming popular in New Zealand, is what I was talking about, and it is quite energy efficient. But ultimately, the true answer would depend on how that electricity was generated. So you'd want to follow it back down the food chain to make sure it comes from the right place. I'm glad you pointed that out.
And thanks for that call. And actually, someone else had emailed something about the Eik bike, and they wanted to. It's essentially like a big wheel for adults with no pedaling necessary, and they wanted to know how that was even possible. This thing must have a pretty decent battery in it to be able to generate 12 miles per hour with an adult on it, and go for more than just a few blocks.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird that, weirdly enough, the problem with developing, futuristic modes of transport like this in many cases turns out to be the battery, and that's where the bulk of the R&D goes in. And it's a lithium phosphate battery, if that means anything to you. That's probably where a lot of the R&D money went in developing an object like this. But it does work. One of the criteria that we have for best inventions is you have to show us the object working. Sure enough, it does. It does what it says it can do.
They didn't drop one off at your office so you could try it out, though, I bet.
No, they did. They did.
Oh. You need to work on that. Our caller mentioned carbon footprint, and number 12 on your list of inventions is the personal carbon footprint.
This is an innovation. I like to include innovations on the list that aren't strictly technological, that are simply excellent ideas that represent an invention, and that's not necessarily have blinky lights on it. And the personal carbon footprint is an idea, and the idea is, we're involved in all these negotiations about capping and trading carbon outputs the negotiations are going on between nations. But you could reconceive that kind of conversation and focus it on individuals, because the majority of carbon emissions in the United States, the people responsible for them tend to be the most wealthy, as in any nation, whether it's the United States or India or China. And if we could reconfigure the conversation to focus on the people who are creating, the most carbon emissions, that would be, a powerful tool in reducing global emissions overall.
Well, there are a number of items in your list that, you could kind of relate them to environmental issues and things like that, sustainability and so forth. For example, the solar shingle that Dow Chemical has developed. What is that?
This is a beautiful idea, and it's a completely simple idea. This is an object that looks like an ordinary roofing shingle, but built into it is a thin film solar panel. That generates electricity quite efficiently. These things, I think, are going to be available to consumers starting next year, and they'll be very simple to install, and will go on any roof that a shingle can go on. And I think ultimately the hope is that most roofs will be shingled in solar panels rather than conventional shingles, and as a result, we'll be generating an enormous amount of electricity that we don't have access to right now.
A couple of kind of ag-related items on the list. At number 16 is vertical farming.
Yes, this is an idea that is very much in its infancy. But again, they were able to demonstrate a prototype for us. The problem, of course, quite obviously, being eventually when you when you're looking to cultivate the most acres possible on the planet Earth, the thing you run out of is acres. And this is a company in Texas called Valcent that is working on vertical farms. That is an apparatus for stacking crops vertically rather than spreading them out horizontally over the land. Ultimately, something like that could be used as an approach to deal with the dwindling amount of overall farmable acreage on the planet Earth.
How is this different from the kind of hydroponics that we have now? Because those are kind of stacked up too, not necessarily the same way, but they at least look similar.
Yeah, they do look similar. This is a form of hydroponic farming that is specifically targeted to being completely stackable and sort of theoretically infinitely vertical. It's particularly configured for saving vertical space. But yes, it's a variation of the basic hydroponic farming system.
Okay, a couple of related items to that. One is the meat farm. And I think that's something, who did I see on television who was kind of making fun of some of this stuff, but not this list entirely, but I think something similar to this. What is a meat farm, and what are we doing there?
Well, it's an old idea, and it's very familiar to fans of science fiction. The idea being basically that instead of raising and then slaughtering animals for their meat, what you do is culture the tissue in vitro. If you want chicken meat, instead of raising a chicken and then killing it, you simply culture its cells, its muscle tissue, and then grow a theoretically infinite amount of it. Aside from being sort of cruelty free, it's very it's an extremely efficient way of creating large amounts of protein for people to eat. It's an ancient idea, not ancient, but old, probably as old as the 20th century. And they're just now, in a practical way, beginning to, a Dutch team is just now beginning to actually execute that and see if they can produce, reasonably practical, efficient results. And they're getting results. It's one of those very early days with that.
On the Daily Show, I forget which day it was last week. On the Daily Show, they had pork mm-hmm. in a petri dish, and of course, Jon Stewart was having some fun with that.
Yeah, well, one of the downsides of this technology is that it's extremely gross because you have these petri dishes full of full of meat, but not attached to any animals. However,
right.
Nevertheless, we got past the grossness of it to appreciate the basic elegance of the idea.
kind of egg-based stuff is actually number two on your list, tank bred tuna. Apparently, this is a big accomplishment because we haven't really been able to do it before.
Yeah, it's tuna are extremely critically endangered animals because, unfortunately, they taste really good, and it's really hard to get them to spawn in captivity. In fact, it had never been done on land, and an Australian firm built this massive aquaculture facility. I mean, huge breeding tanks, and they basically tricked these tuna. They were southern bluefin tuna into believing they were in an ocean in the right place in the right season to breed. It had never been done before, and it has finally been done. You can raise bluefin tuna, and these are huge beasts, by the way. Bluefin tuna are enormous animals, and they're very vicious, and they like to eat each other and basically everything else around them. But these Australians have finally managed to do it. They're raising bluefin in tanks, and it's to be hoped that what they figured out can be used as a blueprint for raising other species of fish in captivity that might be facing extinction in the open ocean.
We're talking about the 50 greatest inventions of 2009 with Lev Grossman, and these inventions are listed in Time magazine. You can go to the Kathleen Dunn fan page on Facebook and find a link to the list of 50 inventions. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we've got a lot more to talk about, including wooden bones and dandelion rubber and the super suit. So you won't want to miss any of that, so stick around. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9:42. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. By the way, I mentioned Greg Mortensen, and I believe he's going to be Kathleen's guest at 10 o'clock tomorrow. Coming up next hour, we're going to talk about a new book about shopping. just in time for the Christmas shopping season. It's a book titled Shoptimism, Why the American Consumer Will Keep on Buying No Matter What. We'll talk about that after 10 o'clock this morning. This hour, we're talking about Time Magazine's list of best and worst inventions of 2009. My guest is Lev Grossman, best-selling author, book critic, and technology writer for Time Magazine. And before the break, I teased to the invention of wooden bones. I've heard of, wooden legs, but this is a different thing entirely.
One of the surprising things about these inventions is that they're not always high-tech. And it's an extremely simple idea, as old at least as pirates, which is, I assume, pretty old. It's a team of Italian scientists who were looking for a new material to replace bones that had been damaged in the human body. And what they eventually came up with was wood, red oak, actually, that when treated properly could be used to use as artificial bones. And apparently the body reacts better to wood than, for example, titanium, just because it's a porous organic material, and it sort of integrates better with the body. Apparently, this is the new cutting edge in bone replacement.
Wow, that's incredible. What about the idea of getting rubber from dandelions?
Well, this is something that's long. We've actually long known that it was possible. Of course, if you had your first choice about where to get rubber, you'd probably get it from a rubber tree. However, rubber trees are, at this point, falling victim to a rapacious fungus, which is reducing the worldwide stock of rubber trees. So people have been looking for an alternative. And you know that milky, gluey stuff that comes out of dandelions when you snap them. That's very akin to the stuff that oozes out of rubber trees, and it can be used to make rubber if you have just the right treatment for it. Well, we've never had it before, but now again, necessity, because there are fewer rubber trees out there, they've figured out a way to use that oozy, milky stuff and make rubber out of it. Hence, dandelion rubber.
Hmm. And how close is that to being something that would be able to make a major contribution to the world's rubber supply?
Well, it's a German team that's doing it, and as is so often the case with early inventions, you'll see something that's incredibly neat, and the next stage is, okay, it's neat, and you've done it once, because we saw you do it, but now we need you to do it 10 million times so it can actually, play a role in the global economy. I don't know that they've ramped it up yet to high-level manufacturing, but my impression is that this is something, that we'll start to see in products late next year.
800-642-1234, that's the toll-free number to call to join our conversation about the best and worst inventions of 2009. 800-642-1234. Feel free to send us an email. The address is talk@wpr.org. The list that we're talking about, there's a link to it on Kathleen Dunn's Facebook fan page, so you can go there and click on the link and follow it right to the list of the 50 best inventions of 2009. Well, anybody who follows competitive swimming would know about the supersuit, because that was there was a lot of controversy over that when it was used in a swimming race.
Well, yeah, that's right. And it's funny. This is an invention that has fallen victim to its own success. The supersuit is it's simply a swimsuit made by Italians that is so good at moving through the water. It's got it's a special material basically that allows swimmers to slip through the water, with the minimum possible friction. And as a result, when you wear it, you set these astounding records. And I believe this was the only person to beat Michael Phelps, the Olympic champion, this year in the 200-meter freestyle, was a guy wearing this suit. Well, immediately after the race, Phelps' coach lodged a protest and said, no, it's not fair. You can't wear these suits because it's kind of a technological boost. And sure enough, whatever international body runs swimming competitions immediately banned the suit. So you won't actually see them in competition. But the suit, which is called the PowerSkin X-Glide, is without question the most efficient friction-free swimming suit ever made.
I wonder if that comes in 3XL.
Yeah.
You know, that when I read that, and actually when I heard the story before, that when it came up, it was a controversy, it reminded me of and I'm dating myself here, it reminded me of the controversy in the 60s over Andy Granatelli's turbine-powered Indianapolis race car that Mario Andretti used to win the race, and then people got all bent out of shape about it because it didn't have cylinders and pistons and things, and basically it was sort of run right out of Indy. But it was sort of the same thing. They technology outstripped, you know, made a big leap, and not everybody was ready to accept it.
Yeah, well, it's you know, it's one of the funny things when technological innovation meets sports. It's kind of like you know, everyone sort of, okay, even better, fantastic, great, excellent job, and then you do a little too well, and they say you're out, you're banned from sports forever. So it's a kind of it's a fine line, and you're always seeing them. You're seeing them in sneakers a lot. You always see things that you need to hit a sweet spot between somewhere between too good and not good enough, just good enough to win, but not good enough to be unfair.
Well, and I'm happy to see that there's been a great leap forward in paper airplanes as well with the Sky King.
I know we were all holding our breath about that. I think everybody should be happy to know that there was a breakthrough in paper airplanes this year. I didn't even know that there was an international competition for paper airplanes, but there is, and there was a new champion crowned this year. I believe it was a Japanese man who's an expert in origami, and the rule is you can't cut the paper, and you can't glue it. You have to fold it out of a single sheet of paper, and you know, the winner is the one that stays aloft the longest. And sure enough, there was a new winner this year, and we actually published a little blueprint, so you can fold your own version of the world's best paper airplane.
Wow. You know, it just makes Time Magazine so much more useful when it's got that kind of stuff.
We're delivering value in all kinds of ways.
Well, you guys are really tricky, man, I'll tell you. On the theme of competition, one of the inventions on your list references an article in Sports Illustrated. It's the no punt offense. Come on, how did football get on the list?
I just thought it was very fun and interesting.
Okay.
A high school coach actually decided to test the hypothesis that there is never a good reason to punt in football. He had tracked this statistically and determined that punting on fourth down really didn't significantly decrease the other team's chances of scoring on their next possession. So he told his team that they were no longer allowed to punt, and they had to go for it on every fourth down. And in fact, as soon as he started doing that, the team's winning percentage went up. So I expect to see the no punt offense spread from the high school level to college and possibly ultimately to the pros.
Well, actually, I think Bill Belichick maybe got that message, only it didn't quite work out for him.
maybe not.
Couple of the other inventions, and we're down to about the last 8 minutes of the program, amazingly enough, the hour is just flying by. The Robo Penguin. Now, that's one, as soon as I saw that, I said, okay, what the heck is this for?
Well, you know, I know a lot of people have been waiting for someone to come along and make an improvement on the common household penguin, because our penguins that we all have aren't good enough. You know, we had a lot of pressure from the photographic department of Time magazine to include robots on the list, because robots tend to look very good in photographs. The problem that we have is that when you look at actual robots, and believe me, I've met a lot of robots in my day, they tend to be quite crappy. They tend to be very lumbering and slow and easily confused and just not very impressive, which is why I was truly impressed by this robot that's called the Aqua Penguin. And it was an attempt, instead of making, you know, something that walks on land, they decided to try to recreate the anatomy of a penguin in a robot. And this thing is astounding. It darts through the water and, you know, moves very quickly and gracefully in three dimensions. And when I saw it, I honestly couldn't believe that it was a robot. But it is. And now, you know, as with so many inventions, now that they've created this incredibly elegant piece of technology, they have to figure out what it's good for. But whatever it's good for, it certainly is good at it.
Hmm. Is crappy a technological term?
Yes, I'm sorry, that's a term of art that not all of our listeners may be familiar with.
You mentioned the photographic department wants robots. I noticed there were at least two of them in here. At number 47, we have the fashion robot.
Right. Well, you'll notice the 40s in the top 50 inventions is it's a little bit what they would call in basketball garbage time, where we just put cool things that aren't necessarily that useful, but we just can't bear to leave them off. And one of the things that we put on this year was a fashion model that was comes out of Japan, and this fashion model is a robot. It is built to look good and to walk the runway. And I believe it also speaks. And it's very impressive. You know, robots tend that mimic the human form. Androids tend to be very uncanny and weird. But this robot is the most astoundingly lifelike, and if I may use another technical term, good-looking robot that I've ever seen.
Aesthetically pleasing.
Aesthetically pleasing, right, yeah.
Yeah, you know. I can maybe help you with that whole wordsmithing thing here. We've all heard of the dum-dum bullet, but your list includes something called the smart bullet.
Yes, we get a lot of military technology generally on the list, especially in wartime, and this year is no exception. This is something that was developed by some private contractors, I think probably under the aegis of DARPA, and we called it the smart bullet, and what it is essentially is it's a bullet that is an explosive round, and you can tell the bullet before you fire it at what distance you want it to explode. So, for example, if you want to fire it through a doorway and have it explode in the middle of the room that it has entered, you can let it know, and it knows how far it has gone away from the gun that fired it. By actually, weirdly enough, counting the rotations when it spins, that's how it tells how far it's traveled. So you could shoot it over a wall and explode, and then sort of take out whoever was hiding behind the wall. It's one of these things that will become standard on the battlefield. Once it's been manufactured on a large scale and people have been trained in it.
Of these 50 things, which one was your personal favorite? And we aren't going to get to the whole list. That would have been impossible in the hour, and this way people will have to go to the Time Magazine website or their local library to actually see the list. But which one was your personal favorite of this list of 50 best inventions?
Well, I have an answer to that. There's always a bit of competitiveness in-house for who can find the coolest, most impressive invention. And frankly, I think that I beat the field this year with invention number 49, and that is a new cloud. There's an international registry of clouds called the International Cloud Atlas, and it hasn't had a new cloud added to it since 1951, which was a subtype of Cirrus cloud. But this year, there is a new cloud that is a candidate for the International Cloud Atlas. It's called Undulatus Aspiratus. And it's the scariest looking cloud you have ever seen. And that was, I think, my personal favorite of all the 50.
And there's a huge picture of it. The photographic department must have been ecstatic over that one.
They were very pleased.
A lovely photo.
Even better than the robots.
Better than robots. I mean, you know, there's a lot more stuff in here, and obviously we aren't going to get to it. Spiderweb silk, the iBorg. There's a 3D camera. There are a ton of other inventions in here that we won't have time to talk about. My personal favorite is the foldable speaker. I'd actually like to try that out sometime. But, you know, we're coming to the end of 2009. You'll be starting to look at inventions for 2010 here just a little over a month. And I would imagine you're really looking forward to that.
Yes, it starts anew every year. So if anybody out there who's listening has an invention, you too could be one of Time's 50 best inventors.
Well, why don't you just, you know, give up your personal email so they can all send something to you? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, you know, I'm easy enough to find. Google me, and you'll find it.
Okay. So they could actually, if someone wants to get their invention noticed by you, you don't mind hearing from people?
Oh, I hope they will. That's how we find some of our best stuff.
Okay. You can see the whole list at go to Kathleen Dunn's Facebook fan page, and you can there's a link there to the list of the 50 best inventions of 2009 compiled by Time Magazine. Lev Grossman, thank you very much for spending this hour with us. It's been fascinating. I always love to hear about new technology.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Lev Grossman is a best-selling author, book critic, and technology writer for Time Magazine. This program was produced by Rhonda Fanning. Appreciate her help and in helping to coordinate this show and talking back and forth. Keisha Mabra was the on-air producer for this morning's broadcast. Coming up, we're going to talk about Shoptimism. Find out what that's all about after 10 o'clock. We'll break for the news, and we'll be back in about 6 or 7 minutes. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.